Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 27th day of March, 2021. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and given that the week started off with yet another mass murder in a politically correct to the max gun-free killing zone, I'm talking about those 10 people in Boulder, Colorado that were killed by, no, not an angry white male, as the press at first leaped to conclude, followed right on schedule by the usual idiotic gun control narrative, in spite of the fact that it was clearly a complete failure again here. The terrorist turned out to be Syrian-born 21-year-old Ahmad al-Aliwi Alissa, whose socialist media profile was then quickly expunged for all the obvious reasons. Well, unless you get your news from the Ministry of Truth, which inclines your host to take a bit different approach to the first segment tonight. With apologies to Jonathan Swift, call it a modest proposal, and I'll build up to where I'm going with a couple of stories to set the stage. Some of them might even seem to be a bit disparate, but you'll see how the dots connect in just a couple of minutes. From the New York Post in the far-left state of Hawaii, three people there who were fully vaccinated have now tested positive for COVID-19, but health officials, sick, are still telling everyone, take Zipoke anyway. The individuals became infected after receiving both doses of the DNA-modifying injections from Pfizer or Moderna. Each of them were represented in the samples here, according to radio station KITV. When these individuals traveled to other cities in the U.S. following travel protocols and mandates, they not only had to wear the mandated masks on the planes, of course, there was mandated COVID-1984 testing involved, too. And that's when the bad news got out. But not to worry, there's a spin here, too. The Post story gives us a couple examples of that. Dr. Melinda Ashton of Hawaii Pacific Health said this case is a reminder of the risks associated with traveling, even if you're vaccinated against the virus, unquote, and even, of course, if you wear the idiotic masks. And Lieutenant Governor Josh Green weighed in, too, worried that some folks might see facts like this as an excuse not to take the experimental vaccine and be a good little guinea pig. Why, the fact that people are taking the poke and then getting infected shouldn't surprise anybody, although not necessarily for the same reasons. Remember, said the lieutenant governor to news station KHON2, 95% of people get immunity from the vaccines. That's hardly 100%, though, isn't it? But that means 5% don't. Some people are going to say, oh, that means the vaccine doesn't work. No, it does work. It works in a huge percentage of people, but not everyone. And that's the important message, unquote. As your host, and of course not for the first time, it also continues to kill more than a few people right after they take it, and that's another important message, but not one the Waystream wants you to hear, any more than they want you to know about long-term effects, which are totally untested, or valid scientific concerns that we've talked about here, courtesy of people like, but not limited to, vaccine expert and proponent Dr. Geert Vandenbosch, who's warned that the effects of mass inoculations in the midst of a plandemic could produce what he called an uncontrollable monster that would kill hundreds of millions in the form of COVID variants that we're already seeing show up. Your host summarized his concerns this way, saying that what he's talking about here is turning the human guinea pig population into a global reactor for producing new bioweapons. And let's not forget little trivialities on the individual level, like increased cancers, long-term infertility, and destruction of people's immune systems, among other nasties that just don't make the press very much. The truth is, folks, that if we had an honest fourth estate that was actually doing their jobs, we'd be hearing a lot more about long-term effects of experimental mass bioweapons research, coupled with mass mandatory injections, whether people like it or not, and whether they call it that or not, and less been about people getting killed by, allegedly, guns, but not necessarily the people who wield them, in gun-free killing zones, whether they call them that or not. So speaking of which, let's see what's new on that front as of overnight Tuesday into Wednesday. And since racial motivation, or at least we were being told that, was such a really big part of the Atlanta shooting, but nothing at all to do with what happened in Boulder, let's start there. 21-year-old Robert Allen Long, suspect in the Atlanta sex parlor shootings, said he was in fact motivated by his sex addiction and not race. And although there's been no evidence that race played any role in the attack, that hasn't stopped the far leftists and the Waystream media, but I repeat myself, from using the tragic incident to add Asian Americans to their long list of victims to further divide and segment Americans. But, writes Patty McMurray for the Gateway Pundit, echoing observations from investigative reporter Jack Posobiec, hasn't anybody noticed that every single one of the 10 victims in Boulder was Can you say this out loud? White. And they were executed in that gun-free killing zone by a guy that the press tried to report as white, their new lone gunman standard villain 101, white male, in fact, who turned out to be a radical Muslim serial immigrant with a long history of, racist and jihadist rhetoric on various socialist media accounts. Well, thankfully, they got that expunged before too many people could figure it out or much less report on it. You can pretty well guess that'll end up being the excuse for why the WAPO, New York Times, CNN, and all the other leftist three-letter news agencies won't talk about it. But if they never talk about it, then they won't need the excuse, right? Says Posobiec, maybe it's time to end anti-white racial discrimination and violence. Hey, I know, folks. Maybe they should be allowed to be armed. Well, come on, not in the People's Republic of Boulder, obviously, or California, or in post-constitutional Biden-Fuhrer-run America. Paul Joseph Watson noticed the racist hypocrisy here, too, saying that Ahmad al-Issa would typically have been described, in a different era, as an anti-racist activist, with his two Facebook page having featured prominent criticism of Donald Trump, advocacy for refugees, and, of course, Muslim immigrants. And despite the gunman's family telling the Daily Beast, another leftist outlet, that the reason for his rampage was a result of him being bullied in high school, hey, folks, your host has to wonder here, does that make it okay if you just kill white people thereafter? His classmates say the opposite is true. Fox 31 reported that Ahmad al-Issa once punched a classmate and then continued to pummel him as he lay on the ground, claiming that the victim had made fun of him and called him by racial names weeks earlier, although none of his other classmates could corroborate that. And one of his wrestling class teammates, Dayton Marvel, told the Denver Post, even, that during Al-Issa's senior year and the wrestle-offs to see who made varsity, he lost his match, quit the team, and then yelled out in the wrestling room that he was going to, like, kill everybody. Nobody believed him, but we were all just kind of freaked out by it, said Marvel. Nobody did anything about it. And then he went on to say he would talk about him being Muslim, and if how anybody tried anything, he would file a hate crime and say they were making it up. And here, folks, I can't help but think, you know, if the waystream press is looking for somebody to blame for the radicalization of this young man, maybe they should look in the mirror. Seems like they did a pretty good job of turning him into exactly what they tell you to be afraid, be very afraid of. Well, if, that is, it's a white male doing it. Reporter Andy Ngo summarizes all of the hypocrisy in this case thusly. Tweeting the photographs of the 10 people killed by suspect Ahmad al-Issa in Boulder, he noted he was told just a few days ago how it's very important and the race of the victims in mass shootings does matter, even if there's no actual evidence that race played any role in the attack. Well, that was then, and now we're simply not going to talk about it. What your host wants to talk about instead, right now, has to do with another story, and they've got the video, courtesy of The Scoop and The Gateway Pundit, about Black Lives Matter, where a mob, and we don't know what color they are and it doesn't matter, but there were about 200 of them, managed to trap 100 customers inside of a different grocery store, this time in Rochester, New York. It was a Wegmans instead of a King Soopers. The mob, and I'm going to say it, of kidnappers, because that's what they were, literally locked the doors from the outside and trapped at least 100 people in the East Avenue ROC Wegmans. Did they shoot them like fish in a barrel? Did they firebomb the building and burn them alive? No. Well, not this time anyway. It was just felony menacing and kidnapping with the potential of manslaughter if anybody trapped inside had died as a result of a medical emergency or a diabetic incident or you name it, said Rochester journalist and radio host Bob Lonsbury. Quote, the Rochester PD is just watching and letting it happen. I guess fire codes and trespassing aren't things in Rochester anymore. What an embarrassing day for the city and the PD. All right, anybody seeing any kind of a pattern here? Or an obvious escalation? Item. The creepy, senile, hair-sniffing, constitution-raping CCP puppet in the White House read from his teleprompter again last night. Referring to the gun-free killing zone massacre in Boulder, Colorado, he said, in spite of the fact that, quote, we don't know all the details. And yeah, folks, that's because there are a whole lot of them they don't want you to know, and he wouldn't remember them anyway. So ignoring a whole raft of inconvenient actual facts,
come on, man,
he again called for eliminating the Bill of Rights and an end to private property. The hell with things like shall not be infringed, he said, quote, we have to act. We should also ban assault weapons in the process, unquote, and we won't let little things like an oath to a constitution that we despise stand in the way anymore. Bottom line, and now maybe the dots are starting to connect, we can forcibly take away your guns, and we can force you to take the poke. probably in that order. So let me lay out just a few statistics to set up the rest of the equation today. And no, I know lots of numbers don't make for good radio, so I won't go to extremes on this score. But suffice it to say, they want to inject several billion people in order to, at least allegedly, protect them from a booga-booga flu that might kill a tiny fraction of 1%, that is, if you're really old. And especially if you don't take good care of your immune system anyway. The problem is, as we've already talked about at length over the last weeks and months, you're many times, maybe 40 times more likely, if you're among the most at risk and elderly population, to suffer more serious side effects from the poke than you would from the booga booga flu itself. And if you're younger, where your chances of getting anything serious from COVID-19 are pretty close to nil, you're hundreds of times more likely to find yourself really, really affected by the mRNA modifications to your genes than you ever would be by the thing you're supposedly being vaccinated against. And as for those long-term effects, well, that's a crapshoot at best, and you're not going to find out about that until it's way too late, not to mention irreversible. And yet, Big Brother and his globalist masters worldwide want to make the poke mandatory. Well, not actually mandatory. They just want to prevent you from having a life or being allowed to travel, do anything you might want to do, much less buy and sell, without their permission, their e-pass and their vaccine certificate, and any other modern slavery mandates, not limited to face muzzles, that they may decide to add later. So here's a quick summary of these statistics. What are the chances any of this will help you? Pretty close to zero. What are the chances that it might kill you? Certainly non-zero, but after all, that's what guinea pigs are for. We do know, though, that even the short-term numbers look more dangerous than the initial COVID-19 booga-booga flu itself. And we've also seen that the chance of dangerous variants being incubated deliberately or in utter ignorance by the mass gene therapy program itself are already very, very real. All of which means that the chance of death by mandatory injection, or at least serious, perhaps irreversible injury, just might be the highest health risk that formerly free slaves face today, and they're probably higher, too, than the chance that you might even be offed in a gun-free killing zone, especially if you can make an informed choice not to do either. All of which got your host to thinking, and maybe by now you can see where I'm headed anyway. Theoretically, the Bill of Rights, and in this case I might be talking about the Fourth Amendment, protects your right to freedom from illegal search and seizure. That ought to include your body, and perhaps it should include injections. Back when you actually had a right to life, liberty, and property, it would have been obvious that doing something to you against your will was a violation of those God-given, constitutionally protected rights. Is your own body your own property or not? Well, certainly not in airports anymore, or pretty soon, pretty much anywhere else, it would seem. There was, once upon a time at least, a thing called the Nuremberg Principles that said informed consent was key when it comes to doing something medically or otherwise to someone. Now, though, just suggesting that might get you banned from Twitter or to Facebook. And it's pretty clear you no longer have a right to freedom of assembly or worship, and forget the free press, too. So that leaves us with the Second Amendment. As I've said many, many times, the Second Amendment protects the only explicitly enumerated right to property in the entire document. It says, the right to keep and bear arms, explicitly, shall not be infringed. But hey, the Biden Fuhrer and his ilk have been doing it for a long time anyway. But as I've been working up to, the confluence of these things got me thinking. A sizable percentage of Americans own firearms. There are probably more than 400 million guns in the United States today. That's more than one per person in the nation, but since those who own them tend to have more than one, while many of those essentially being prohibited in the leftist regimes probably don't have any, and thankfully, at least not yet, we don't have complete gun registration, the distribution isn't completely obvious. What we also know is that defensive uses of firearms amount to approximately 3 million a year, although many such uses, for obvious reasons, aren't reported, and that's at minimum an order of magnitude higher than the use of guns in violence or suicides. Not that gun restrictions have made any difference on that score, though, because as you may have heard, and Professor John Lott demonstrated in one of the seminal works on that score, More Guns, Less Crime, in virtually every case you can imagine, whether it's concealed carry liberalization that allows more people to defend themselves and as a result crime goes down, or simply more armed households resulting in safer neighborhoods, or increasing numbers of women who decide no longer to be a victim and learn to defend themselves with the great equalizer, a handgun, the pattern is undeniable unless you're a lying leftist media outlet. John Lott was right. More guns do mean less crime. In fact, a piece from the Des Moines Register in March of last year, debunking some of the leftist BS, notes that in an apples-to-apples comparison among young people, the 2018 accidental death rate from firearms among those aged 14 to 17 is 0.23 per 100,000, while the accidental death rate for motor vehicles in that same age group is over 25 times higher at 6.48 per 100,000. In other words, the death rate for firearms accidents among youngsters aged 14 to 17 is actually 96% lower than motor vehicle-related accidental death rates in the same age group. And patterns like that repeat whenever there are honest statistics being kept. For example, the unintentional firearms fatality rate now stands at 0.15 per 100,000, and that's declined over 94% since records began to be kept in 1903. Meaning that fatal gun accidents now rank as one of the lowest causes of injury. And I gotta say it, what do you bet that the unintentional vaccine fatality rate from the new COVID-1984 poke is gonna end up far higher than 0.15 per 100,000? The bigger question is whether that number is ever gonna be honestly reported. But one thing's for sure, ponder this. The vaccine manufacturers, in other words, Big Pharma, have complete immunity for any deaths that they might cause. Meanwhile, the firearms manufacturers are not only being held liable, but they're being demonized, along with Bill of Rights groups like the Gun Owners of America and especially the NRA, even though the latter is actually less effective at protecting those rights, for any firearms death that are clearly the result not only of misuse, but actual malice. And for now at least, owning a firearm is voluntary. You actually have to choose to go out and buy one. While I seriously doubt the same can be said for much longer when it comes to not being vaccinated, or at least not being a gene therapy guinea pig. You can't go into a post office with a firearm, but you can't go into a post office without a mandatory face diaper. And guess which one is federally protected by the Bill of Rights and shall not be infringed? Not your right to breathe, that's for sure, nor your right, it would seem, to walk poke-free. Because pretty soon, you're not going to be able to go into a federal building, much less a grocery store, hardware store, or Walmart, without your mandatory DNA modification. And proof thereof. That's already true in Israel. And they've already got an increase in COVID vaccine-related deaths that, if they were allowed to be openly talked about, would prove it. And finally, folks, we've got examples like what happened in a gun-free killing zone in a King Soopers grocery store on the south side of Boulder, Colorado earlier this week. 10 people are dead, whether they were vaccinated or not, who might now be alive, oh yeah, I'm going to say it, if they had been carrying a firearm. The gunman had a long gun. Would he have probably been able to kill one or two before people figured out what was going on? Probably. Would he have been able to kill nearly as many if even a few of the people in that store had been armed? Almost certainly not. Is there any way to know what those numbers would have been now? No. But can we use our brains to make some informed connections of the dots? Well, yeah, especially if we haven't been dumbed down by the leftist indoctrination centers and ministries of truth. So buckle up. Here we go. I want to play a game today that I've been thinking about for a while, but let's call it Test the Logic. And it involves using typical progressive leftist arguments and bogus logic to see where it leads if you employed actual facts as opposed to the made-up kind that they like because it's the only way to get where they want you to go. Let's start here. Have you heard about herd immunity? Yeah, if enough people become guinea pigs and take the poke, which may or may not actually do anything, well, we're told it will certainly help because then the booga booga flu won't be nearly as scary when we get to the magic number, and they don't even know what it is, of herd immunity. Maybe half, maybe three quarters. I wonder if herd immunity might apply to an armed society, which Robert Heinlein famously said is a polite society. In other words, if you didn't know whether somebody that you were talking to was armed or not, it does tend to make people behave more politely, maybe even courteously. Without question, statistics have shown that higher percentages of people carrying concealed certainly has that effect, especially when it comes to those who might want to rob them or mug them. How many does it take? Probably less than herd immunity as defined by virologists. It's certainly true that in places like Kennesaw, Georgia, where they passed an ordinance requiring every household to have a firearm, even though there were exemptions for conscientious objectors and people who just plain couldn't handle one for whatever reason, home invasions and similar violent crimes decreased dramatically, and that's been decades ago now. Other genuinely progressive municipalities, and I use that term a bit tongue-in-cheek, have followed suit and seen similar positive results. Certainly, I think it boils down to this. You can make a far better statistical case that people are better off carrying a gun than taking the poke and being a guinea pig that way. What does the nutcase left try to do? Always the exact opposite. So, given all the insanity, without actual testing, much less long-term testing, attempting to force people to do something that those with half a brain anyway don't want to do, I got to thinking this morning, how about the opposite? How about instead of mandating people to do something that's self-destructive and downright stupid and might end up even creating a super bioweapon that could destroy hundreds of millions or billions of people, let's mandate something that would actually do some good. I know. How about mandating that every man and woman in the United States be required to carry a firearm? Well, okay, let's be realistic here. You know I'm not a big fan of mandates of any kind, and I'm certainly not a fan of the fascist-style mandates, where it's the public-private partnership, often enforced by zoning and government business licenses, that says, unless you wear your mask, you won't be allowed into a store. Never mind that the store doesn't have any choice in the matter. They're going to be forced to issue the mandate themselves. But where does that lead us? Well, how about this? If we can force you to wear a mask, or else you'll be denied entry and service, and allegedly for somebody else's good, because after all, you're not allowed to choose whether you want to breathe or not, can't we force you to carry a firearm for your own good and other people's good, because you might need to defend them? In other words, for the very same, at least alleged, reasons? If we're going to meddle, can't we at least find something that's actually listed in the Bill of Rights? Mandate every man and woman in the United States that they must carry a firearm at all times. I mean, think about it, folks. If they're willing to mandate that you have an injection that changes your DNA not only at all times but evermore, why not mandate that they carry a firearm? It's safer, less likely to kill somebody by accident, and certainly doesn't have the potential to create a massive worldwide pandemic. And when you get home, unlike with the vaccine, you can take it off. Although the bad guys might still figure out it's laying somewhere where you could get to it, like in the nightstand. Grocery stores, hardware stores, chain stores, Walmarts, and of course banks, all of them should say, ho, you cannot be admitted here unless you're properly wearing your piece. Why not go from no mask, no service to no gun, no service? And at a restaurant, the idiots wouldn't even have to take it off between bites. Can't you just see it now, the greeters at Walmart saying, somebody wants to come in, where's your Glock? And if you don't have a gun, why, step over here. We've got several to choose from. Yeah, that'll work. People could even customize their pistols like they customize their mask, you know, advertise their shopping or sexual preference. But instead of, I'm a good little slave, maybe it should say, I'm a free person. And this proves I know what that means. And I know there are going to be people thinking, wait a minute, you're going to have people wearing guns into banks? Well, folks, not long ago, back when we were a free country, anybody wearing a mask into a bank would have certainly raised eyebrows now, wouldn't it? And how about in places like post offices? They might not be able to really go postal anymore. Or airlines. We can't have people carrying guns on planes now, can we? Well, I've told this story before. When I was a boy, my dad was an international ferry pilot. He took Beech and Cessna airplanes, flew them all over the world, carried a survival kit en route, and then got on a commercial flight after he delivered the plane to wherever it was going, in Japan or Australia or Africa, and flew home. He always carried a pistol. You'd have been a fool not to. And so, of course, did most commercial airline pilots. Part of their normal flight bag. A lot of times they'd show each other in the cockpit before they took off what they were packing. And would you believe, there were no hijackings. At least until they started disarming people in those very places where they might have otherwise needed to carry one. So, I'm going to suggest one more time that it's appropriate when you see idiocy literally running rampant like today, to test the logic. See if the same kinds of rationale that applied stupidly result in exactly what we're seeing, lawlessness abounding, and lots of people fixing to die for reasons that they'll probably never really understand, couldn't be applied instead to strengthen God-given rights rather than undermine them. So yeah, folks, truth is, your host despises mandates, especially of the fascist kind, where it's voluntary. Or we're going to stick a gun in your ribs while you decide to volunteer to comply. Maybe just because you want to keep your job or your kids. Well, maybe if people were armed, they wouldn't be able to do that. But it's a principle here I want to emphasize. If they intend to mandate that you take an experimental vaccine that just might destroy your life, kill you outright, or shed a truly deadly worldwide bioweapon variant, doesn't it make far more sense to at least encourage people to take responsibility for their own health and their own safety and do something about it? Back when we were a nation of law, we actually understood property rights. We'll be right back. Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone.
land. Take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And given that it was such an eventful week, let's take a look at some of the other news now. And maybe I'd better get this out of the way first. The criminally evil, senile pretender-in-chief finally had his first press conference. 65 days in, that's a modern record, even for elected presidents. Nobody except a few fawning prostitutes were fooled as to why. No doubt he was taking all kinds of drugs, but it wasn't enough to hide the galloping dementia. And certainly just to review the whoppers and the gaffes would take longer than we have. And besides, there's real news to talk about anyway, like North Korea having launched a couple of ballistic missiles, since they know exactly what they're dealing with. Asked about it, the Biden-Fuhrer didn't seem to understand the question anyway, so he laughed. He was only marginally less incoherent when it came to the question of the filibuster, which he thought should return to the way it was when he came to the Senate 120 years ago.
So filibuster, with regard to the filibuster, I believe we should go back to a position of the filibuster that existed just when I came to the United States Senate 120 years ago.
Ask about the border invasion. Biden blamed Trump. No, really. And then said, quote, look, I guess I should be flattered that people are coming because I am the nice guy, that's why they're coming. No, you lying cretin, they're coming because you promised them freebies. Honest pundits, so, call the so-called press conference an unmitigated disaster because it's getting tougher and tougher for Americans to ignore the laughingstock in the Oval Office, even when the sycophants throw him softballs and he drools all over them. Perhaps the most telling headline, though, was the Daily Mail's bit of honesty. After posting pictures of what they call Joe's cheat sheets, including headshots of the journalist he was supposed to call on Friday they actually came right out and admitted he'd lied. Here's the headline. Biden made false claims about the border, wrongly said he's sending back the majority of migrants, twisted the facts about Trump's tax cuts, and so on. And the story went through a whole list of the whoppers. Mostly, though, they said he erred, in spite of his cheat sheets. And that's what tells you how much of a disaster it really was. All right, on to real news. Given now that the mark of the beast is all but a fait accompli, you can pretty much count the days until no one will be allowed to buy or sell without wearing the face muzzle and, of course, because it doesn't make any difference, taking the poke and making sure your DNA is properly modified. But before we get there, what else do you need? Oh, sure, complete disarmament of the slaves. Although some now prefer the term feudal serfs. I guess someday we'll have to ask the question, how much difference is there really between modern feudalism and modern fascism? Bottom line is, not much if you allow yourself to be a disarmed peon. And other than mandatory mask and vaccine mandates, how do we measure progress towards that totalitarian goal? Well, one way is this. The United States Supreme Court, sick, on Wednesday heard oral arguments in a really disgusting case called Coniglia v. Strom, which could have sweeping ramifications for policing, or what it's now degraded to, due process, or what that's now degraded to, and mental health, which now seems to mean if you can rub two brain cells together, you haven't got any. Don't forget, folks, you can be a perverted, senile hair sniffer and still sign executive orders and steal people's guns while you fumble around your basement behind the concertina wire with Secret Service protection, even. And the Biden regime and various attorneys general from 9 different states have now urged the high court to uphold. We don't need no stinking warrants, especially when it comes to stealing what you thought was your property once protected by the Second Amendment. Yeah, warrantless gun confiscation, and you know they're all for that. But what would ultimately become a major Fourth Amendment case, too, began with an elderly couple's spat over a coffee mug. Remember the old saying, hard cases make bad law? Well, stupid cases seem to make even worse law. And by the way, I do have to ask, isn't this the same United States Supreme Court that couldn't be bothered when a full third of the states in the Union saw and could prove, but they didn't want to hear the evidence, outright election fraud? And now they're going to tell us whether or not shall not be infringed and no warrant shall issue actually still matter? A story goes like this, though, courtesy of Nick Silva at Forbes, Zero Hedge, and a whole bunch of others. In August of 2015, 68-year-old Albert Coniglia joked to his wife, Kim, of 22 years, that he didn't use a certain coffee mug after his brother-in-law used it because he, quote, might catch a case of dishonesty, which quip then spiraled into an hour-long argument. Finally, growing exhausted from the bickering, Edward stormed into his bedroom, grabbed an unloaded handgun, put it on the kitchen table in front of his wife, and said, with a flair for the dramatic, why don't you just shoot me and get me out of my misery? Uh-oh. You might have a TV show called that, but if you say it at home, folks, goodbye, firearms. Unsurprisingly, the tactic backfired. The two continued to argue. Eventually, Edward took a drive to cool off, but when he returned, the argument flared up again. Kim decided to leave the house, spend the night at a hotel, and the next day she phoned home. No answer, and here's where the plot thickens. She then called the Cranston, Rhode Island police and asked them to perform, don't try this at home, kids, a well check on her husband, and then escort her home. When they arrived, so-called officers found Edward on the back deck. He seemed normal, they wrote afterwards, was calm for the most part, even said he would never commit suicide. However, notes the background, none of the officers asked Edward any questions about factors that might relate to his risk of suicide, of violence, or any prior misuse of firearms, of which there was none, meaning not only no criminal record, but no history of violence or self-harm. In fact, one of the officers even admitted later he, quote, did not consult any specific psychological or psychiatric criteria or medical professionals for his decisions that day. Not, folks, that it would have mattered, because as we saw in the Soviet Union, you can just rig that, too, and declare that anybody who doesn't support the party line or is not properly woke or part of the cancel culture is obviously insane and shouldn't want to have guns anyway, because the very act of wanting them means you shouldn't be allowed to have them. Police, though, still claimed that Edward could hurt himself and insisted he head to a local hospital for a psychiatric evaluation. He refused, saying his mental health wasn't any of their business, and agreed finally only after police falsely promised that they wouldn't seize his guns while he was gone. Well, he should have known better. They were lying, and they did. Confounding the dishonesty, police then told Kim that her husband had consented to the gun confiscation, and believing the seizures were approved by her husband, Kim then showed the officers where the two handguns the couple owned were, well, at least for about another minute, because they were promptly seized. Your host, folks, actually prefers the term they were stolen, which is what acting under color of law means. Even though Edward was then immediately discharged from the hospital, police finally only returned the firearms after he filed a civil rights lawsuit against them. Quick aside here, folks, as many people have learned the hard way, the lawsuit may end up costing more than the value of the property that was stolen in the first place, which is why property seizure and civil asset forfeiture is such a great Big Brother growth business. Notably, when they seized the guns, they didn't claim it was any kind of an emergency or to prevent imminent danger. Instead, and here's the crux of this story, folks, the so-called officers argued that their actions were a form of community caretaking. And you see, if their community caretakers involved, that evidently means they can do anything they want to you. And this, of course, is what's called a narrow exception to the Fourth Amendment's requirement that, well, back when we were a free country, no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation. That doesn't matter anymore, obviously. And come to think of it, back when the founders wrote that, a man's oath actually meant something anyway. Case in point, take a look at what we now see infesting the swamp in the Oval Office. And in order to understand how cancers grow, folks, and the slippery slope becomes an outright vertical drop, the Supreme Court nearly 50 years ago, says the story, allowed that community caretaking exception. Notice how they never call it a loophole when it's something they want to do to the law, to the actual Bill of Rights prohibition, claiming it was then designed for cases involving impounded cars and highway safety on the grounds that police are often called to car accidents to remove nuisances like inoperable vehicles on public roads. Now they're going to use it to take your firearms. But now, both district and appellate courts have upheld these seizures as, oh, say it with me, folks, reasonable, because anything the almighty state wants to do to the slaves, the peons, the proles, the serfs, is, of course, reasonable. And they use the community caretaking exception. You know, the feudal lord gets to decide what the serfs are allowed to do and not, because the lord is the community caretaker. And whatever he decides to do with his property, that includes the peons, of course, is, by definition, reasonable. The First Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, in looking at the Coniglia case, acknowledged that, quote, the doctrine's reach outside the motor vehicle context is ill-defined, unquote, but hey, since when does expanding state power require anything that's actually well-defined anyway? You'd have thought shall not be infringed was well-defined, but obviously it no longer amounts to even a mere suggestion, much less a prohibition. Nevertheless, that court decided that the doctrine could be extended to private homes, which are, of course, no longer private since they have the exception, and they ruled that officers, quote, did not exceed the proper province of their community caretaking responsibilities, unquote. Funny, isn't it, how that now seems to include killing people, even if they're at the wrong address. And don't even try to count how many dogs have died for that excuse. Oh, well. Siding with law enforcement sick, the First Circus claimed that a police officer must, quote, act as a master, octung, of all emergencies. Unt is expected to provide an infinite variety of services to preserve unt protect community safety. You will wear your mask. When we say jump, you will say how high. Unt if we take anything you own, you slave you. It's community caretaking, because just like you, it's all our property anyway. In ruling that police didn't need no stinking warrant, that so-called court actually said the community caretaking exception is, quote, designed to give police elbow room to take appropriate action. We should update that term. Nowadays, it's jackboot room. Meanwhile, in their opening brief for the Supreme Court, attorneys for Coniglia warned that, quote, extending the community caretaking exception, when it shouldn't have existed at all, folks, to homes would be anathema to that Fourth Amendment thing, because it would, quote, grant police a blank check to intrude upon the home. And that's obviously not an unwarranted fear. I could spend the rest of the hour talking about reasons why the founders wisely said that this concept that was then called a general warrant, which they saw abused under King George III, was something they wanted to prevent Big Brother from being able to do. Well, they've been doing it electronically for years. They do it at airports. And now they want to do it physically and take your stuff. In a joint amicus brief by the Cato Institute, the American Civil Union, and surprisingly, perhaps, even the ACLU, you know what they say about blind pigs and the occasional truffle, those groups noted that, quote, everything from loud music to leaky pipes have all been used to justify warrantless invasion of the home. And furthermore, and your host can cite any number of examples on this score, folks, the whole idea of allowing the police to search something just because somebody made the nearly fatal mistake of calling 911 for help could have perverse effects. Said the brief, quote, when every interaction with police or request for help can become an invitation for police to invade that home, the willingness of individuals to seek assistance when it might be most needed will suffer. However, the communist puppet regime, in their amicus brief before the Supreme Court, glossed over any of those concerns and called on the justices to uphold the First Circuit Court ruling, saying that, quote, the ultimate touchstone of the Fourth Amendment is reasonableness. Ut we will decide what is reasonable, you slave you. And the Department of Justice went on to argue, if you can believe this crap, folks, that warrants should not be, quote, presumptively required. Now, regardless of what that stupid Bill of Rights says, when a government official's action is objectively grounded in a non-investigatory public interest, such as the catch-all that we've all gotten used to, health or safety. Yes, we can require a mask, we control your movement, we can invade your home, we can bend you over and shove a needle into you. If we want, we can take anything that we blankety-blank and will want to. Can you see where this leads? Well, it's pretty obvious. All you got to do is look at history. Furthermore, the Department of Justice argued that the actions of the officers, even if they were acting well outside their actual lawful authority, quote, did not violate any clearly established law. Und, see, we no longer have clearly established law, so it's impossible for the masters of the peons to ever violate anything. If we can get away with shall not be infringed and infringe it, if we can say you don't have a right to freedom of assembly, of worship, of speech, if we can say we don't need no stinking warrant, there is no clearly established law that they could possibly violate. Now, here's probably the best comment in this whole article. In their amicus brief, the Institute for Justice noted that, at least when it came to the founding generation, secure did not simply mean the right to be spared an unreasonable search and seizure, but also involved harms attributable to the potential for unreasonable searches and seizures. And they said that expanding the community caretaking exception to the actual Bill of Rights language would, quote, allow warrantless entries into people's homes on a whim. And that, of course, is the intent, because the totalitarian regime now occupying the swamp wants to make blankety-blank ensure that they can take your guns on a whim. What's their whim? Well, you might use them against them someday, given what they clearly intend to do, and you'll eventually figure it out. And that, of course, is verboten. The brief also argued that this totalitarian overreach, quote, involves the arbitrary looming threat of general writs that so incited the framers and would undermine the right of the people to be secure in their homes. And that, of course, folks, is the actual, undeniable, very clear, and probably soon to be confirmed by a court that doesn't care anymore about the Bill of Rights intention. And during the Wednesday hearing, says the Forbes follow-up story from Allison Durkee, the so-called justices offered mixed views, there's a shocker, pointing out that warrantless entries into the home seemed necessary for a whole bunch of wonderful reasons, so we don't need no stinking Fourth Amendment. They also acknowledged, though, that the caretaking exception could be interpreted in an overbroad way. Gee, do you think? Quote, the starkest form of your position will lead to officers backing away from going into houses when old people have fallen, or there's concern about that, or when there's risk of suicide, said so-called Justice Brett Kavanaugh to the plaintiff's attorney. While Justice Samuel Alito at least acknowledged, one of the things that is troubling to a lot of people about the caretaking exception is that it doesn't seem to have any clear boundaries, unquote. And that, folks, I'll say it again, is precisely the intent. Because if there are no clear boundaries, there's no clear law, and Big Brother can do whatever he blankety-blankin-well wants, as we have seen over and over and over again throughout history, and again now in recent years. And it's important to understand that this multi-pronged attack on what's left of the Bill of Rights is happening completely up and down the line. Case in point, from Tim Brown via Guns in the News, Sons of Media Liberty, and others, Americans have no right to carry guns in public, regardless of what that shall not be infringed thing once said a divided Ninth Circus panel in bank. In a ruling on Wednesday that reversed a prior Ninth Circus decision striking down a Hawaii firearms restriction as what it actually is, unconstitutional. Said so-called U.S. Circuit Court Judge Jay Bybee, Bush appointee, writing for the majority of an 11-judge panel in a 127-page justification, quote, there is no right to carry arms openly in public. No, we never read that damn Second Amendment, don't you know? Nor is any such right within the scope of the Second Amendment, unquote. And obviously, folks, I never read a single word from any of the founders that actually signed the document.
Morons. I've got morons on my team.
Well, Strother, these people were never on your team. And in trying to make this justification, the so-called judges in the majority on the panel look back at 700 years of legal history. That includes, of course, the feudal period, doesn't it? Dating back to 14th century England, and they found overwhelming evidence, yeah, sure, that the law has never given people a right to, quote, carry weapons in public spaces. Now, full stop here, because you might have thought people wearing black robes, and you'd be wrong, would have half a brain. I don't think they even have that combined between the bunch of this so-called majority. Because the law isn't what gives people the right to keep and bear arms. It's the creator of the universe and human nature who did, and the law was supposed to protect it. In spite of their 127 pages of BS, they're totally ignorant of the whole point of the American Revolution. And to realize their profound ignorance, all they really had to do was read the first two paragraphs of the Declaration of Independence. The 7-judge majority had to trace legal text back to 1348, when the English Parliament enacted the Statute of Northampton, banning carrying weapons in fairs or markets, or before the King's justices. At least, folks, they're coming right out and telling you, we're bringing back feudalism, and you serfs got nothing to say about it. Writing for the dissent, senior U.S. Circuit Judge Darmond O'Scanlan, a Ronald Reagan appointee, and I'll put it this way, said the majority failed to read the text or the history. Quote, the Second Amendment's text, history, and structure, and the Supreme Court's reasoning in Heller all point squarely to the same conclusion. Armed self-defense in public is at the very core of the Second Amendment right, unquote. The case, by the way, had to do with a Hawaii man named George Young, who sued in 2012 for the almighty state there having denied his applications for permission from them to carry a concealed or openly visible handgun, because Big Brother Hawaii requires such a license for the peon to carry a gun in public. What's a license, folks? Remember, by definition, it means you don't have a right. That's why you need the license. And the very act of asking for permission means you're a good little slave, and you know that, and accept it. As any good slave should. From there, let's go to the next logical step and see how his minions of Satan who walk in men's shoes will continue to pull this off. from the People's Republic of Oregon, this is from Brock Simmons at the Gateway Pundit, comes SB 554, which effectively ends the whole point of the concealed handgun license or permit. Remember, slaves don't have rights, they need permission. By making it such a minefield that the very act of asking for it guarantees that you're a criminal and they're going to make you suffer for it. Here's how Simmons puts it out in the upfront scenario. Suppose you have a concealed handgun license in Oregon. Yep, you're a good little slave. You ask permission, and the almighty state says, well, for now at least, we will deem to let you, as long as you are a good little slave. You have no criminal record, of course. You're an average person going on about your day. Let's suppose one of your parents is having a health issue, so you need to travel across the state to help them out for a few days. You're bringing groceries back to them, and a cop pulls up behind you, turns his rack lights on, because you've got a tail light out. While running your plates, the cop discovers you have a CHL, a concealed handgun license, permission from the almighty state, recall, and he asks, are you carrying? And you say yes, because you're a licensed holder of a CHL. You've never had any trouble with the law, but unbeknownst to you, there's a school a couple blocks over that you never notice because you don't travel that direction to get your parents' house normally. And also, unbeknownst to you, that local city government has passed an ordinance, Octung, that bans CHL holders from being adjacent to any school grounds. Aha! Gotcha! All of a sudden, you're an instant felon. You're arrested in front of your family, hauled off to jail, held on $25,000 bond, slandered by hysterical reactionaries in the media as, quote, man with gun arrested near school because alarming headlines sell, and eventually you're sentenced to prison, as you so richly deserve, for daring to ask permission to do what was once a constitutionally protected, God-given right, and you didn't even know you were violating it. This, says Brock Simmons, is the utopian wet dream that the far-left socialists in the People's Republic of Oregon are now pushing. SB 554 removes a large portion of state exemptions and allows municipalities to craft their own gotcha kind of gun laws, ultimately creating a patchwork of varying laws that differ from arbitrary line to arbitrary line. So there's no good way that a good little slave can possibly know and find his way through the maze. Like a rat in a trap, you're caught. Interestingly, says Simmons, the bill only targets, and I'm going to change one word here, legal CHL holders, people who have asked for and received permission from the almighty state. They've been through training, they passed a background check, but it of course does nothing to address the rampant crime, rioting, looting, mugging, firebombing that's running rampant, along with the rise in shootings by, guess who, that Portland's becoming known for. All right, here's where I pause and interject some comments. The point, folks, has never been to stop crime. Witness what they're doing in Portland. It's to stop certain people from having God-given rights and make sure that the other people, the kind that are intended to overthrow those, can run rampant, exactly as they're doing. And so what they do is, first they get people to say, oh, I guess I better have permission to exercise what was once a God-given right. Oh, yes, I'll jump through the hoops. I'll pay the fees, which are now being doubled, by the way, to be a good little slave. And then, when they change the rules on me, I'll jump through those hoops, too. And when finally they put up so many hoops that I can't possibly jump through them, ooh, I'll suffer for having been a good little slave. And guess what? As history shows, right after the scapegoats that they set up, those are the first to take the hit. And the registered license holders will be the very first to be disarmed. After all, didn't you tell them exactly where your guns are and give them permission to search you when they felt like it? Well, even if you didn't, they can add that later. And SB 554 is among those things that are laying out the blueprint. For example, from the summary of the bill via the Oregon Firearms Federation, SB 554 effectively ends concealed handgun licenses while ironically doubling their costs, and under this bill, any public building, any property near it, can and will become a no-go zone for CHL holders while they are legally, at least, armed, which will soon be an oxymoron anyway. Furthermore, the definition of public building will be greatly expanded to include anything they want. Airports, any building owned or controlled by any city, county, or metropolitan service district, any property owned by a college or university, and any property even near those buildings. And that's just for now. You know what they'll do later. Yeah, it'll ultimately include what you thought was your home, because it's near one of those buildings, too. And the penalty for being on or near any of these locations is 5 years in prison and or a $125,000 fine. Isn't it funny, says this piece, that the very socialist Democrats who intend to render you helpless are the ones, along with the thugs who back them, that are bringing chaos to our streets. Yep, exactly as they intended. So don't be fooled.